नमाम विष्णुपादाय कृष्ण प्रस्थाय पुत्रे श्रीमति भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी इति नामने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे यद विशेष शून्यताय कष्टचारि सिद्धारिणे जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासरी गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। You probably saw from the schedule the topic I'd like to speak about. This is a preempting the how-to questions. How to chant attentively and how to have those kind of things. This is an answer to the how-to question. The Bhaktivedanta Institute has their whole field of consciousness study, and that's not what this is going to be. This is a scientific analysis of what consciousness is, but rather in relation to chanting, what should our consciousness be, and what does Krishna do when he sees us chanting in different ways, in different states of consciousness? So the frame of reference I'd like to begin speaking on the topic is one of the classic messages of Srimad Bhagavatam is the Ajamila story. Just some appreciation historically. When Srila Prabhupada came to America, he brought with him first canto in three volumes. We know that in trunks, those metal trunks that you get in India, and they had Bhagavatams. And selling his Bhagavatams was one of the ways that he had some meager means to maintain himself. Then, after some time, he had his Bhagavad Gita manuscript stolen. I don't know if you know that history. He had a manuscript which he was planning to print in the West, and someone stole the manuscript along with his manual typewriter. So he had to do a Bhagavad Gita manuscript for printing all over again. And then that glorious event where Macmillan agreed to print his Bhagavad Gita, although they abridged it. Anyway, and then he did other translations, teachings of Lord Chaitanya, and then he resumed the Bhagavatam translation. Chapter by chapter, he had them printed in softback copies, mainly for the devotees to read, and then gradually second canto, third canto, and each time he would come out with more. Each time he would come out with more, the numbers of copies were increased because Prabhupada was pushing us, encouraging us, pushing us, engaging different leaders in competition. Tamal Krishna Maharaj and Ramaswara were competing. Who would distribute more? And, you know, anyway, it was a wonderful history. And then Prabhupada chose to print massive amounts, the smaller unit price, for three books. First canto, part one. Second canto, part one. And sixth canto, part one. So I had read first canto, part one, and was very eager to read, because Prabhupada chose it, second canto, part one, but I didn't get as far as sixth canto, part one. I was always puzzled, why sixth canto, part one? And the answer is that it deals with the theology of the holy name in the first three chapters. And the story of Ajamila is told by Shukadeva Goswami, to Maharaj Parikshit to explain the importance of chanting and the importance of bhakti that arises starting with chanting. So it's worth reading again and again and again. It's worth the world having access to the Bhagavatam's theology of the home name. So that's what we're going to do right now. Shukadev Goswami explains, as an answer to Maharaj Pariksit's question, what can be done to prevent sinful persons from having to experience the suffering of hell? But different religions have their theology to address that question. There's sin, and there's reaction for sin, and there's a lot of suffering when that reaction comes. What can be done to mitigate that? So think about it for a moment. And one of the things that differentiates this religion from that religion from another religion is how they view the answer to that question. This is the way to compensate or atone for sin. So when that question was asked by Maharaj Pariksit, just after hearing the hellish planets at the end of the fifth canto, the very compassionate king, Maharaj Pariksit, although he's about to die, he's concerned about the welfare of others and is asking what can be done to mitigate that, not have living entities have to suffer for that sin. What can be done? So, making it short, Maharaj Pariksit hears answers that are along the line of karma kanda, then jnana kanda, then bhakti, because the Vedas are made up of all three. And Maharaj Pariksit is not content with karma kanda, although atonement can neutralize reacting for sin, the tendency to do it again is still there. So it's not a complete solution. Jnana kanda can check the tendency to do it again through knowledge, but then even discriminating people may do it again or act in a sinful way. So the real solution is uprooting the tendency. And that's what our topic is. Bhakti is such a process. And bhakti begins with hearing and chanting. That seventh canto, the nine processes of bhakti, begin with shravanam, kirtanam, etc. Shravanadivihi, hearing and chanting. So, to illustrate through Puranic reference or historical reference, Shukadev Goswami chooses to explain the point by means of an example, a historical example of Ajamila. So quickly, Ajamila was highly qualified brahmana who was ideal in many, many ways, trained by his father, very respectful to Brahminical culture, very respectful to his father, expert in Brahminical duties. We'll ask it again. Anybody that has, please check your cell phone and make sure it's not going to, the same thing isn't going to happen again. It's distracting. Shut it off. Vibrate mode or whatever you have to do, please. So, one fine day, Ajamila was in the forest gathering articles for yajna, for his spiritual master, much like Krishna and Sudama were doing for Satyapani Muni. Only, instead of a thunderstorm, something else happened. He saw a scene that in modern times is all over the place. Or like, it's on billboards and you don't have to go anywhere and find it. It's in your face, of a low-class Shudra decorated in such a way to incite the lusty desires of a prostitute, who was dressed in such a way to incite the lusty desires of a jongula. And he saw the scene, and he had never seen a scene like that because he was a nice Brahmin boy that never went to the movies or watched television or saw billboards, or, you know, he just was very simple and pure. But when he saw such a thing, it struck him in such a way that it strikes anyone that has false ego. And please remember from this morning, any living entity that takes birth in this world gets one. False ego. Before you even do anything, you got one. And then there's varieties of false ego, but something that's essential of the different varieties of false ego is, as mentioned this morning, I'm at the center. And not only I'm at the center, but it's my nature, it's my birthright, it's me to be an enjoyer of all that I survey, to be an enjoyer of the objects of the senses through whichever particular variety of senses, depending upon the form of life that one gets. From Bhagavad Gita we know that the living entity, when the living entity gets the body of a dog, one behaves as dogs behave. You bark, you wag your tail, you chew on bones, you do dog things because you've got a dog body. You got a king's body, you do what kings do, and you got a demigod body, you do what demigods do, you got a worm body, you do what worms do. So the senses are attracted by and repulsed by different senses, sense objects, depending upon the embodiment. And the embodiment has everything to do with our karma, but karma is driven by false ego. I'm entitled to be the enjoyer of stuff. Vastu. So, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur writes, and I'm going to read his verbatim quote. If one actually becomes convinced in the depths of his heart that there is no situation in the material world that can possibly bring one enjoyment, has actually taken the greatest step forward in spiritual life. Shall I read it again? If one actually becomes convinced in the depths of his heart that there is no situation in the material world that can possibly bring one enjoyment, has actually taken the greatest step forward in spiritual life. I've been very happily repeating something that I heard Prabhupada say on more than one occasion, and saying it again and saying it again, so I'll say it again just now. According to Prabhupada, one of the foremost duties of a spiritual master is to convince the disciple that it is abjectly futile to seek for happiness through fruitive activities. I'll say it again. One of the foremost duties of a spiritual master is to thoroughly convince his disciple that this abject futility in the attempt to find happiness through fruitive activity. I'll read one of those passages from Bhagavad Gita. You know, the Vyavasayatmika Bodhi verse of Bhagavad Gita 241. You can look it up later. Twice in the purport, Prabhupada says the same thing. And I'm reading from the purport of 241. The highest perfection of Krishna consciousness is attaining Prema Bhakti, right? Going back to Godhead, right? Developing love like the residents of Vrindavan as they have love for Krishna. Well, that's true, but here's what Prabhupada writes. The highest perfection of Krishna consciousness is renunciation of the material conception of life. This state is automatically achieved by progressive Krishna consciousness. And at the end of the purport, that's the end of the first paragraph. The last paragraph, the whole process is describing bhakti. You know, this vyavasayatmika bodhi, undivided devotion to Krishna. The whole process, however, depends on perfect knowledge of the soul beyond the conception of the body, not theoretically, but practically, where there's no longer a chance for sense gratification manifested in fruitive activities. And then there's false ego that convinces us, impels us otherwise. We're meant, we're entitled to. It's me to be at the center, and whatever is around me is an object for my enjoyment. And I just have to figure out how to do it this way or do it that way, and that's freedom. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of sense gratification. All living entities are endowed with the inalienable right of sense gratification. It's who I am. It's who everyone is. That's life. And as discussed this morning, when, as long as that attitude is there, one will not see Krishna. One certainly won't enter into Vrindavan. We want to re-enter into Vrindavan. So, Ajahnila did what a false ego person will do when jayate vishaya pumsa, when meditating on the objects of the senses. Sandas teshu upajayate. And, you know, then the domino, by the contemplation, you know, from Bhagavad Gita, one develops some attachment. From detachment, memory is lost. And memory is lost, one becomes bewildered, and one becomes bewildered and falls into the material pool, and that's what happened. Ajahnila went back to his home, and he got out the scrub brush. He tried to remove that impression. He did his mantras, he did his yajnas, he did his slokas, he did his rabbinical thing, but its false ego is driving that I'm the potential enjoyer of objects and the mind state. And then the domino sequence happened. He eventually went to visit the prostitutes, and he had some wealth, that from his marriage he had some wealth. So he used that wealth to take care of the happiness of the prostitute, while the prostitute was taking care of his so-called happiness. And it continued and continued and continued. It even says, eventually he brought the prostitute into his own house. His wife didn't like that. His father and mother didn't like that, but he didn't care what they liked. He was attached. So eventually he left the house and cohabited with the prostitute, and since he didn't have any other means of maintaining himself than his brahminical activity, which was his livelihood before, he took to other means. He started to steal, etc., etc., etc. Drinking, cheating, he became a gunda, he became a mobster, he became like a bad person, whatever the language. And there was nothing that he didn't do to satisfy his craving, his appetite for sensual pleasure. He became, his dominical existence was lost, and this other persona took over. And in the course of that, many children produced of the prostitute, and you know the story. This youngest son, although the age that's given, he was 88, and still had such desire. Doesn't get up and go away. You know, the bell rings at a certain age. It just continues. That's when he knew. And because of all of his sinfulness, when it was his time for meeting the body, the Yamadutas came to punish him for all of his sinful activity. And what does one do when one has, he saw the Yamadutas? They were coming. And he felt fear. Now what happens when you feel fear? Besides, you might scream. Your mind goes to that which you're particularly attached to. Of course, he was attached to the prostitute, but even more so, he was attached to his young son, who Prabhupada explained, super soul, Paramatma, recognizing his previous life as having indirectly done some service to Krishna, to Vishnu, within his heart he named his son by the inspiration of Paramatma Narayana. So he was accustomed to calling his son and calling his son, Ryan, come here, come have your meal. Ryan, sit on my lap. Ryan, let's go for a walk. Ryan. Because he had affection for his youngest son. Prabhupada's comment is, just as water flows down, affection also flows down, the tendency for an older person to feel affinity and affection for a young child is very natural. So his youngest child was the recipient of his affection, and that's where his attention went. And so in that moment of the Yamadutas arriving, he called for his son, the object of his affection, because that's what one does when there's fear. What are you attached to? You take shelter of that which you're attached to, as if that's going to give you some protection or solace or something. So when he called Narayana, the Vishnudutas appeared and ordered the Yamadutas to stop. And the Yamadutas were shocked. Who stops death? We're agents of Yamaraj. He's the Lord of Death. Who are you? He said, we'll tell you in a moment. If you say you're the agents of Yamaraj, then you must know the principles of Dharma, because you're representing Dharmaraj. So please answer some questions. They gave him a Bhakti Shastri quiz. Who is to be considered sinful? Is it everybody? Because everybody's doing something and there's flaws in something, everything that somebody does, and so everybody is sinful? Or there are some that are considered not sinful? And what criterion is to be used to consider who's sinful, who's not sinful, who's to be punished, who's not to be punished, and what are appropriate punishments? That's your Bhakti Shastri quiz. And they gave an eloquent reply, although they looked like very fierce. And they were. They gave an answer. If you just read the answer, it looks really good. You get an A. But the Vishnudutas gave him an F. Not an A. And their statements were, alas, how painful it is that irreligion is being introduced into an assembly where religion should be maintained. Indeed, those in charge of maintaining the religious principles are needlessly punishing a sinless, unpunishable person. Now this is at the end of the first chapter of Canto 6. I'm going to read one verse. It's a very important verse, describing in general, the situation of a conditioned soul. The foolish embodied living entity, that's us, inept at controlling his senses and mind, for the most part it's us, is forced to act according to the influence of the modes of eternal nature against his desires. That's a topic in Bhagavad Gita, isn't it? What is it that impels one into doing something, even if it's against your will? Your discrimination says, it's a description of anishtita bhakti. It's one of the categories where I contemplate, you know, that the insufficiency of knowledge example. I contemplate, if I can do this particular thing, it would really help. And I consider from different angles and read scripture and talk with devotees. And yes, this will be really helpful. And so I make a vow, I'll do it. And some time passes and we're not so consistent in doing it. Or the other way, something I shouldn't do, and really it would be good if I didn't do this particular something. We make the determination based on knowledge, fortified by scripture and everything. I shouldn't. And then we find ourselves doing it. It's the state of anishtita bhakti. It's impelled as if by some other will against our own will. Why is that? Arjuna asks. We know his answer, Krishna's answer. By contact with the mode of passion. Kamesha, desire. Krodesha, anger. Lower modes of nature bring about those misfortunes. And it has to be that way. It's just contact with the modes of nature, particularly the mode of passion. What's that? Try to enjoy. I want to enjoy. And Krishna's out of the picture because I'm at the center. False ego. He, the foolish embodied living entity, is like a silkworm that uses its own saliva to create a cocoon and then becomes trapped in it with no possibility of getting out. The living entity traps himself in a network of his own fruitive activities and then can find no way to release himself. Thus, he is always bewildered. And repeatedly he dies. That's a classic paraphrase of the conditioned existence of the living entity. And we want to go back to Krishna. So something has to dissolve that disposition of separately enjoying. That's the false ego. And whether we go this way, that way, or the other way, we just keep bumping into it. This fruitive intention, even in the sphere of devotional service, like a question was raised in the morning class. Do something because what's in it for me? Entrepreneurial mentality in our relationship with Krishna. I'll chant your name and you're going to take care of the following list of things. Right, Krishna? And Krishna doesn't do it on our terms, and we're tapping our foot saying, what happened, Krishna? Please report in, you know, your non-execution of your part of the bargain. Anyway. The Yamadutas are essentially saying that there's bad results when people who are in a position of authority, like Yamadutas, on behalf of Yamaraj, they're to exercise discrimination according to the conclusions of scripture. But if someone doesn't do that, it's a wrong action that produces a bad result. And they again say, he's sinless. Specifically why? Because he's uttered the name of Narayana. And they acknowledge or admit, when he was calling the name Narayana, he wasn't calling Lord Narayana, he was calling the Son Narayana. But even that, Abbas, chanting, you know these terms, Namavas, there's like beginning, intermediate, and advanced. That's easy. Nam aparad, offensive. Namavas, clearing. Shuddha. So he wasn't a Shuddha Nam. He wasn't even intentionally calling Lord Narayan, he was calling the sun. That kind of chanting. But because it wasn't intentionally trying to free himself from the responsibility of his sins, and on that basis calling Narayana and continuing to commit sins, it wasn't offensive, it was desperation kind of chanting. So, now that's just background. Now, the verse that I wanted to speak about, on consciousness while chanting, is a, you can look it up later, 6-10. Sarvesham api agatvam agami sin. Agatvam is the quality of sinfulness. Sarvesham api agatvam. The best means of eradicating sin and the reaction for sin. Idam eva sunishkritam, the best of all. Nama vyaharanam, chanting of the holy name. And what happens when you do that? Vishnu or yatas tad vishayamatihi. Here's Prabhupada's translation for that verse. Simply by chanting the holy name of Vishnu, such sinful persons may attract the attention of the Supreme Lord, who then considers, because this man has chanted my holy name, my duty is to give him protection. So we're going to spend some time with this message. What prompted Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur answers this later. What prompted the Vishnu Dutas to come? And the answer that's given is Lord Vishnu said, go rescue them. Why? Because of this quality spoken in this verse. It's my duty. This person has chanted my names. This is now from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary. Lord Vishnu considers. This person has chanted my names. He is mine. It is my duty to protect him. So, Vishnu sent the Vishnu Dutas. And they came to protect him. Now, that not just stop the Yamadutas from dragging his soul and bringing him to the court of Yamaraj and getting a sentence of punishment for all of his sinful deeds, and then some lower-like form following that, and lifetimes and lifetimes and lifetimes before again coming to the human form of life. Not only protecting from that, but relieving him, according to what Shukadeva Goswami said earlier in the chapter, relieving him even from the tendency to do such things again. Now, it's a really wonderful leela, or narration, because it shows the effectiveness of hearing. Because here's Ajamila hearing this Bhagavatam class, and the speaker is the Vishnu Dutas. You know, we heard a Mahabharata class from the Yamadutas, but he heard a Bhagavatam class from Vishnu Dutas saying the glory of the holy name is such that it surpasses any kind of prayaschitta or procedure for atoning for sins. Lifetimes and lifetimes and lifetimes of benefit from that has come. Simply by chanting the holy name of Lord Vishnu, such simple persons may attract the attention of the Supreme Lord. That's the translation Prabhupada has given of this verse. So So the word in Sanskrit is matihi, that Krishna considers. So what is it that he considers? Oh, this person is called my names. So think of our chanting of japa that may be not as bad as a jamila, but not the topmost stage either. Matihi. Our consciousness may be in different stages. We'll spend a little bit of time discussing that. But regardless of the stage, proportionate to or according to the way that we regard Krishna, Krishna reciprocates even in such a sinful person as a jamila, and therefore the natural comparison is what to speak of somebody that's striving sincerely. That's what we're going to be trying to do. Striving sincerely to simply take shelter of Krishna's holy name. We're going to do an exercise at the end. I think you'll all like it. I'm sure that you'll all like it. Where we'll get to experience this. Wait and see. Stay tuned for the exercise thing. But the philosophy of the Bhagavatam message, the Harikatha message here, is when we're chanting Krishna's name, Matihi, he hears. And he feels something. Oh, they're calling my names. So, I'm duty bound. Of course, he doesn't have any duty. It's just he's affection bound to help them. Even in this Abbas stage, like a jamila, he wasn't even intending to call. So what to speak of, then there's intending to call. And then there's striving to be nothing but attentive in your calling. And then there's, higher and higher and higher stages. In Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on that verse, 6 to 10, is 11 pages long. And I'm going to just summarize some of that because it's really nice. The essence is this matihi word. Krishna hears, Krishna reciprocates, according to yehamam prapadyante. According to how we regard Krishna, Krishna reciprocates. So to enter into Vrindavan, we have to face Krishna, call his name, and appeal to Krishna to again accept us in his service. Because we left. And we went away for a long time. Countless lifetimes we went away. And now we're coming before him again, calling his name. Not mechanically, but with attention to him. He is at the center, and we're appealing to, again, bring us back home to his Krishna's home, Vrindavan. So here's what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, this is some part of what he says. Ajamila, so we're going to go start down here. Ajamila, before he was sinful. He was a brahmana whose primary activity was karma, kanda, rituals that brahmanas do for material elevation. Secondary was Vishnu bhakti. That was his status. Vishwanath refers to verses where it's very clear that's what's being said about him by Shukadeva Goswami. So, when he allowed his senses to go to low-grade activity, and then he allowed his mind to contemplate the same, and then he developed a desire for such things, and sequences happened, and he engaged himself in sinful activity, his pious credit was destroyed, and his secondary bhakti was also destroyed. Secondary bhakti was also destroyed, Vishwanath analyzes, and therefore he was fit to be punished, as the Yamadutas said. The great fortune was Paramatma inspired him to name his son Narayana. So when he was engaging in calling his son, this is before death, all of the sinful reactions were eradicated. Prior sinful activities. Unfortunately, Kunjara Sotra, like an elephant, he, after bathing, calling his name of his son, he would do more sinful activities and then become implicated and then call his son. But never was it done with the mentality that I will neutralize my sins and keep on sinning. That would be Nama Parad. He wasn't doing that. And then when the time of death came and he called really intensely, Narayana! And no more sinful activities. He was sinless. Squeaky clean. So, the Vishnudutas came. Sent Matihi, sent by Lord Narayana, who is considered all. He's calling my names. It is my duty to protect him. Vishnudutas, please go at once and give him protection. Then, so that was bhakti without offense, not as a secondary process. Therefore, he was eligible for that special kind of protection. Above the protection is someone that's a karmakanda brahmin, where bhakti is secondary. Then Vishwanath says, then there's those who accept bhakti or devotion to Vishnu as primary. And they take shelter of someone who can guide them. A guru, a teacher, and carry out the regulations of bhakti, even if imperfectly performed, even if in the course of doing so there's some improper execution, and with that some offense and seva aparad and so forth. That qualifies one in yet a greater degree of bhakti. And then he, I put in big letters, so I'll read it twice. According to the, this is Vishwanath commenting on this other stage. According to the degree of bhakti, they attain destruction of offenses. We're in the stage of trying to overcome offenses. So, the degree to which bhakti is awakened, that is, we're turning towards Krishna and appealing to Radha Nila Madhava and Nama Prabhu, please accept me in your service once again. It is with a feeling of shelter taking, that kind of devotion. According to the degree of bhakti, then the offenses are eradicated. Now here comes the matihi part. That's what we do towards Krishna. Here's what Krishna does towards us. And according to the degree of bhakti devi's mercy, they attain the principal result of bhakti or prema. That's the reward or reciprocation from Krishna. When he sees that we're making that effort to chant his name with feeling, with devotion, matihi, he then sends, in the case of Ajamila, he sends the Vishnudutas. In this case, it's sending Bhakti Devi to awaken the soul's condition to the stage of prema. Not just clean, but love. And we know subsets of that are the ecstasies of devotion. It's by descending mercy in reciprocation from our efforts. Is it clear, the distinction? I'll say it a different way. As of this morning, when Mother Jasoda was trying to bind Krishna, this is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, saying when she was trying, prayasa, she was making some endeavor to bind Krishna, but it wasn't happening. Because Krishna is the Supreme, and he had another idea. He wanted to go steal some more butter. So his sva-shakti and his icha-shakti, he exhibited those two potencies, and that was it. Mother Jasoda couldn't bind him. But she continued to endeavor, just like we may tomorrow during 64 round day struggle a little bit, but if you continue to endeavor, you know, in what way? The ways that we're describing? Taking shelter of Krishna, recognizing Matini, Krishna is there, he's hearing. The name is not different than Krishna. And he's hearing the quality of our chanting and the quality of our bhakti, the way in which we're calling. Krishna will reciprocate, so we continue to endeavor, even if it's not happening, you know, according to our expectation of what's supposed to happen, whatever that is. No, Krishna is on the other side. Bhakti isn't a one way, it's a reciprocation with Krishna. Krishna's hearing. He's hearing our heart, not just the name. Then, according to his own will, in his own time, in his own way, however he wants to do it, Bhakti Devi will carry us, not our efforts, but Bhakti Devi will carry us to prema, as with Krishna. Seeing Mother Yashoda's sincere affection of love, he withdrew those other two potencies and exhibited his Kripa Shakti, and she was able to bind him. You know, for her, it's being able to bind him. That was because that was her motherly inspiration. And ours may be serving Krishna in some other way, or whatever way Krishna wants us to serve him, but it's that desire to serve, not have an experience, or whatever may be in the mindset. Just to be in that position of unconditional service to Krishna. And to confirm that, or support that, he refers to a very nice verse from the 11th canto, chapter 14. We discussed this just this past Christmas holiday in Chicago, and Dravida was there. He liked it so much. It's one of the slokas he added to his repertoire. He told me later, I really liked that verse. I just learned it this morning. Thank you. So it's, this is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur referring to it, but it was a very much liked verse by Rupa Goswami also in his Bhakti Sandarbha. He refers to this several times. So the verse begins, Yata, Yatatma, Parimrijate Sao. That's the first line, the translation. To the degree that the Atma becomes purified by hearing and chanting my glories, a person is able to perceive my real form and qualities and experience their sweetness. Just as the eye, when smeared with a special ointment, anjana, is able to see finer objects. So we're not able to see finer objects of, you know, the spiritual form of Krishna because of anartas. Anartas in the language of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, they're like clouds or mist that obfuscate the direct rays of the sun. So we know that there's sun because it's daytime, not nighttime, but we can't see the sun because the sun, we can't see Krishna, although we're chanting, because there's all this other thing that's in our heart. And we can't remove that thing that's in our heart. We can try, we can sincerely strive for that, but it's not in our hand to do that. But when Krishna sees, Matihi, oh, they're striving. Let me help them. And then the cloud or the anartanivritti is not dependent upon us, although that's necessary. It's dependent upon the descending mercy of Krishna. But Krishna's hearing not only the sound, but he's hearing the intent, and the intent is proportionate to the bhakti, the shelter taking, the feeling with which we're calling Krishna's name. Proportionately, Krishna removes that covering, or the metaphor is like the application of an ointment when one can then see finer things. So, you know, kind of like lenses, corrective lenses. Krishna can enable us to see Him. It's up to Him to provide that facility and then show Himself. It's not up to us. And same with chanting of the holy name, to actually enter into the activity of, I'll just refer to it this way, chanting 64 rounds, where from the beginning to end, or whatever part of it, Krishna wishes to touch our hearts in a way that will move our hearts so that we'll know His presence is there, although theoretically we know that, just we're so covered, we're not feeling it. But with faith and on the authority of Scripture and Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur and Prabhupada and Shukadeva Goswami, He's hearing. And He's responding. He may wish to see us. He even goes into it. It may take several lifetimes. He specifically says. But if Krishna does that, it says to bring us to such a high, defined stage of determination and shelter-taking. It's on Krishna's terms. That's part of love. One of the things that I like about and share with devotees that are practicing Krishna consciousness, and that is, I learned that in the first month that I was living in a temple, it's a nice lesson, when you surrender unto Krishna, it means you're surrendering on His terms. Not your terms, and then Krishna is supposed to perform. That's not what surrender is. That can go on, but that's not what surrender is. It's not really what surrender is. It's not the essence. The essence is when Krishna is very kind, He may help us understand that. So He goes on. This is still Vishwanath's commentary on this one verse. Thus, after the destruction of sins and offenses by the chanting of the name, which is caused by impressions of previous bhakti, persons then attain the Lord by the mercy of Bhakti Devi. So it's two-part. It's like our sincere endeavor to contact the holy name properly, and sins and tendencies for sin, the power is there to eradicate them. But more than that is Krishna sees, oh, they're really trying like this, then He gives Himself. And He quotes a verse, Canto 1, Chapter 5, Text 19. Oh, that person who serves Mukunda will never under any condition return to the material world. Like practitioners of other processes, remembering the embrace of the Lord's lotus feet, eager for the taste he has experienced, he will not desire to give up those feet again. Anyway, it's wonderful. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Then he goes to yet another level. This is like, you know, coming attractions. He refers to Goptritve Varanam Tava. One of the principles of surrender is Goptritve Varanam Tava. He's my protector. He's my maintainer. He's my only shelter. So one who chants in that mood. Or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Ashleshava Pararatam Panashtumam Adarshanam Marma Hadam Karotuva. Krishna can deal with me however He likes. Unconditional. Here's Prabhupada's translation. Let Krishna tightly embrace this maidservant who has fallen at His lotus feet. Or let Him trample me or break my heart by never being visible to me. He is a debauchee after all and can do whatever He likes. But still, He alone, no one else, is the worshipable Lord of my heart. And when one who calls Krishna's name in that way, like the gopis in their state of madness when Krishna left Vrindavan to go to Mathura, they went mad. And one of the things they did was reenact Krishna's pastimes and sing His name and just to satisfy their hearts. How did Krishna feel when they were doing that? He apparently didn't come, but the earlier teachings say they're seeing Krishna always in that mood of intense feelings of separation. That's their qualification for being with Krishna always. Although their mood is the mood of separation, they're with Krishna always and He is always with them. And finally, he quotes this position of Krishna's matihi towards the gopis. A famous verse that begins, na parayé hum, na parayé hum. Shivaram Maharaj wrote a whole book on na parayé hum. I'm not able to repay you. I'm not able to repay you for your spotless service. Even within a lifetime of Brahma, your connection with me is beyond reproach. You have worshipped me, cutting off all domestic ties which are difficult to break. Therefore, please let your own glorious deeds be your own compensation. So we can look to the love of the gopis when the gopis were calling Krishna's name as there's nothing higher than that in Krishna's estimation and under the authority of the Bhagavatam and our acharyas and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the topmost stage. So what reciprocation did they receive? Now we'll go back, Ajamila. It wasn't even intending. See what Krishna did. Matihi, oh. So we're going to have a little exercise where we'll experience that. At least have the opportunity to experience that. What time am I supposed to end? What's the schedule say?
1 p.m.
And Shamsundar?
Most of the
weather. Are you going to be ready for this exercise? Yes? You're prepared? Okay, so there's one other thing I wanted to say, and I'll say it shorter than I wanted to say it, but it's very nice. It's the pastime of Sudama, who experiences this very same phenomena with how Krishna considers. So one of the qualities I'm trying to portray or highlight in relation to chanting, what consciousness we should be in when chanting, is to recognize Krishna's consciousness towards the chanter. Our consciousness should be, the phrase that Bhaktisiddhanta uses is drishta vichar. Vichar means change. And drishta vichar, changing the position of seeing ourselves at the center instead of seeing Krishna at the center. That's the consciousness to strive for when chanting. During this japa retreat, especially I'd like to encourage you to focus on that. It is very powerful. Or Prabhupada's way of saying is, one should not act in such a way to try to see Krishna. What's the rest? But act in such a way that Krishna will want to see you. The mood of service. Act in such a way that Krishna will want to see you. Chant in such a way, similarly, that Krishna will place himself willfully at the center, and this 11th canto verse, according to the degree of one's purification through bhakti, through the bhakti with which one chants, Krishna can show himself. Eye to eye, face to face. To the degree that that the soul has become cleansed. So, whatever our position is, that's where we start from. We can't wish, oh, I wish my position was better than it is. It is what it is. And for whatever our position in our spiritual trajectory, we can again turn to Krishna and appeal. Krishna, please accept me. Please engage me in your service. I turned my back on you and walked, like somebody might do in some relationship. You know, we don't like that when people do that in this world. What to speak of turn our back on Krishna and walk? And how many lifetimes? Who can count how many lifetimes? and how what misfortune came our way, and now dirty and contaminated in so many ways, we're again calling for Krishna to accept us again in his service. We're not eligible. And with humility, we should know that in reality. But we're just pleading with Krishna with his kindness, which is there. He's unlimitedly kind. To again accept us. Please bring us back to Vrindavan, to our home, which is Krishna's home, where we belong. But this false ego needs to go. So the effect of sincere chanting is Krishna can remove not only sins and tendencies for sin, but even, you know, false ego itself. This is this Krishna vichar. Krishna is at the center, not me at the center. I can't do that. Krishna can do that. Devahuti said the same thing to Lord Kapiladeva. I'm in Maya. My husband that I've been with for thousands of years has now gone away, and I'm just attached to family life, and I'm lamenting, woo, woo, woo. I realize I'm in Maya, I'm covered by Maya, but that Maya is your Maya. So as you allowed it to cover me, you can also remove it. Please remove that Maya. Please again accept me, in our case, please again accept me in your service. And sincerely calling Krishna's holy name in that way, very powerful. Krishna's hearing not only the words, but the mood with which we chant. So, Sudama, I'll try to do this quickly, but he from his childhood he loved Krishna very much, and Krishna loved him very much, and their lives separated after some time. After school was over, they went different directions, like it happens. And Sudama lived in a place just outside of Dwarka, not in Dwarka, but Porbandar. Anybody from that area knows Porbandar? It's where Sudama resided. Somebody knows? You know that place? Near Dwarka? Porbandar? Familiar? Huh?
Mahatma Gandhi was born there.
Mahatma Gandhi also? Porbandar. Okay, well that's Sudama's place too. Porbandar. So, his dear wife didn't want to see him so emaciated and etc., etc., and so she pleaded with him, and he was feeling quite contented, but he didn't like to see the disturbed condition of his wife, so he went to see Krishna. And he brought his little bag of a cloth with broken rice, because that's all they had, inferior quality rice to offer to Krishna. And when he was holding it behind his back, Krishna snatched it. What have you brought me? You don't come to see someone without a gift. What have you brought? It was Heidi. So he snatched the rice and started eating morsels. Rukmini caught his hand. One reason, some persons say, was this isn't fit for you. But another reason is how you repay him. And that's Krishna's consideration. Listen to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's description of that. So on Sudama's way home, he was thinking, Krishna is very kind. He knew why I came, and he didn't even ask me why I came. Because if he asked me, I'm a Brahmin, I would have to tell him the truth. And then Krishna would have gladly given me the reason that I came for, but then I would have become proud. Oh, I'm special. I have all this opulence. So Krishna knows my weakness, so he didn't even ask me. Krishna is so kind. Krishna is so kind. And when he got home, he couldn't find his home. although he was just there the day before, there wasn't a home, said there was a palace. And he called for his wife, and someone came out of the palace and didn't even recognize, because the woman was gorgeously attired in jewels and ornaments. And then when she spoke, he recognized her voice, and, you know, oh, you're my wife. What happened? She said, well, I thought you arranged all this. You spoke to Krishna and did all this. And then he understood, Krishna is very kind. Krishna is very kind. I didn't even ask that because my wife was in anxiety to see. So he then contemplated as follows. So I'm going to read just two verses. The Lord, this is Sudama reflecting on Krishna's kindness, a quality of Krishna, how he's kind upon his devotee. The Lord considers even his greatest benedictions to be insignificant, while he magnifies even a small service rendered to him by his well-wishing devotee. Thus, with pleasure the Supreme Soul accepted a single palmful of the flat rice I brought him. It is significant before the most opulent Supreme Personality of Godhead. But he considered it so significant. And what Krishna was considering, what he gave to Sudama, was insignificant. We'll see Vishwanath's commentary. It's very nice. Rukmini was considering, you won't be able to repay him for this broken rice. Don't take any more. You won't be able to repay him because he's offered it with such love. And then the next verse. The Lord is supremely compassionate, the reservoir of all transcendental qualities. Life after life, may I serve him with love, friendship, and sympathy, and may I cultivate such firm attachment for him by the precious association of his devotees. So in the verse, this word guna layena is used by Sudama to describe Krishna. Guna layena. In the word for word, it's a reservoir of transcendental qualities. But one of these qualities is this matihi. Someone calls his name. We call his name. Krishna matihi, he considers, oh, they're calling my name. I must protect them. And protect means the impurities of heart. And ultimately, depending upon the degree of bhakti, even the very false ego itself. Protect us from that covering of false ego. Seeing ourselves at the center instead of Krishna at the center, Krishna can remove that if we chant carefully and attentively and striving to overcome offenses, which by Krishna's mercy becomes possible. And this other guna is the quality where something that's offered to him, even as insignificant, like little gesture we may make to make some offering to Krishna, Krishna considers it very significant. Oh. And then what he gives, he doesn't consider very significant. That's the person whose name we're calling. His heart is very soft. Our hearts are different. Very hard. We want and want and want and demand and, you know, make our list of what we require of him, what he's supposed to do for us. So our hearts are different. But Krishna's heart is very soft. He's very loving. So what to speak of all the other qualities? That person's name is the one that we're chanting. So here's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary. First verse. Krishna thought that what was given to me, though great, Guru, was small, And then what his friend was giving through, though insignificant, was great. So, what was given by him was insignificant. This palace, what's a palace? He's got 16,108 of them. So, palace for his dear friend Siddhartha, no problem. Insignificant. Out of his unlimited opulences. But what Siddhartha had given, that was very significant. That's Krishna's quality. For that reason, Krishna accepted the rice offered by, I accepted the rice offered with devotion. Then, he's now paraphrasing the next verse. This is Sudama's glorification. May I have affection, sneha, equality, pranaya, and friendliness, maitri, and service, dasyam, birth after birth, with that person who has affection for his devotee. Having attained special association with the Lord, endowed with great expression of love, mahanubhavena, he, the abode of all good qualities, may I attain association with the Lord's devotees, birth after birth. That's Sudama's reflection. And one way we think of, common way we think of sympathy is someone fortunate sees someone unfortunate. Thinks, oh, sympathy for the unfortunate. That's one way. That's not Sudama thinking, oh, Krishna's unfortunate, so I'll have sympathy upon Krishna. That's not what he's thinking. It's another kind. Like a musical, a sympathetic chord is something that, say there's a string on a piano or piano tuning, and so one string vibrates, and then a sympathetic string may vibrate. So let whatever is in Krishna's heart resonate within my heart. Let me have that quality. He's at the center, and whatever he wants, whatever his desire is, let that be my desire. With love. And Krishna reciprocates according to whatever our position is. So we can't imitate. We're instructed not to imitate. But from whatever our position is, we can strive sincerely to come to a transformed state of, so how we're regarding the name while we're chanting, the expectations of the heart, like the earlier question this morning that Prasanna Mataji was asking of, you know, I have my expectations from Krishna, from my chanting. How to like let go of that and just take shelter of Krishna to become again situated in a mood of loving service according to his indication, whatever that is. And better watch out because it may be something you don't want. I'm very familiar with that territory. I have lots of service that I don't want. I'll gladly relinquish most of it, if not, well, not all of it, but we ask for service, and the indication that Krishna gives, whatever that is. Anyway, but there's some power of discrimination, license for discrimination allowed, but on Krishna's terms, that's all. Whatever his indication is. And that's the mood that I'm appealing. The consciousness with which we bring to chanting and recognizing Krishna's reciprocation in kind. So we're not going to take questions because I've been talking too much, because we need to do this exercise. So Shyamasundara Prabhu, please come and guide us.